Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Oh my flying crumbs, we have got an absolutely lovely episode for you just now with my amazing pal Siobhan McSweeney. You probably know her off either Dairy Girls or from hosting this last beautiful, heart-smashingly lovely and inspiring series of the Great Pottery Throwdown. Well, she's so funny, and this was one of the easiest and laugh out loud funniest conversations I've had for the podcast ever, probably. So you're in for a treat, is what I'm saying. I've got a bit of a treat that I can finally announce, hopefully this time with a modicum of confidence. But guys, for the third time, I have attempted to reschedule my Hench tour dates. And this time they have been rescheduled into late July and early August. Please, please go to my website, jessicafostercue.com, and look at where they are. I would love so much to see you there if any of them aren't sold out. And I so hope if you had tickets for any of them that have been rescheduled so many times that you can still make those dates. Because here is hoping that by then we can actually be there and do it. And I can see this show off that I'm so proud of. With one last summer of love. I think it's 8 dates. If you look at those dates and go, oh, excuse me, I'm sad. You were meant to come to insert place. It's not my fault. There's nowhere where I've gone, do you know what, actually, I don't think I want to go to that city. That's not happened. It will be because the theatre didn't have any dates that weren't like in a million years time when I can't still be doing the same show for my whole life. This is it. This is the last 8 tour dates. Please have a look on my website under the My Doings banner and come. God, come. We might even be able to clack elbows on the way out. Maybe. Thanks for listening generally. The biggest favour you could do me ever would be to tell other people about the podcast. That's how it keeps growing. One way of doing that is simply to give it a 5-star review and subscribe to it so that it effortlessly pops into your podcast inbox every Friday morning or midnight Thursday if you're a night owl. I imagine many of you are cool enough to be night owls. If you've got the means and the will to support the podcast financially, I'll take it. You can become a patron if you want. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and I will swap you for your money. Very cool podcast related stuff, including guest recipes and lots of completely exclusive or sometimes just very, very early content. For example, there is Hoovering third birthday episode with incredible guests, including Kiri Pritchard-McLean, Rich Wilson, Amanda Wright, brilliant actor. Anyway, that's coming out very, very soon. If you were like, well, I've got a tenner for you, and then I never want to talk about it again, you can do that by going to Acast Supporter. Links in the podcast notes to any of that. So let's get into it. Shall we just get into it? Siobhan and I haven't seen one another at this point since, I think, the Edinburgh Festival 2019, where we did fun things together for the Guilty Feminists, who do big shows up there. So it's been a while. It's like old friends. I mean, it is. It's literally old friends catching up. For this, obviously, we hoovered over the Zooms, as is the modern way. Zero to warn you about in this episode, which is nice, other than potential food envy, of course. Maybe. We tried something fun in the sense that we gave ourselves £1.50 maximum. And we were tasked with visiting our closest shop, just the closest in proximity to our home, and seeing what we could get to eat with that money. And I mean, it's safe to say, it worked out to be a lot more successful and delicious for one of us than it did for the other. Where to even begin, actually? Well, maybe we'll start with what we're eating, because it's a surprise to each other.
Yeah.
I've gone for the most interesting things I've never tried before. I've managed to get two items.
Okay.
For £1.25, actually.
Oh.
I think I'm more excited about one than the other. I've got these Algerian dates.
Oh, that looks lovely. That's a fine big pack as well.
A nice fine big pack. They've given you a spear, a plastic spear that looks like a bit like supposed to look like a twig. I don't know how I feel about it. It on the outside it says one. It's got a list. One, fresh Algerian dates. Two, luxury and premium quality.
Luxury and premium.
I would have been all right with luxury or premium, but luxury and premium?
Jesus.
Get it in my mouth.
I mean, I already feel like, I mean, yeah, I don't think you should eat these. You should display them.
I know. I feel like this is equivalent to just rolling up a couple of 50s. Just rolling up money notes.
How much were these,
down,
by the way?
They were 60 pence.
60 pence.
I don't know how much luxury. And three natural dates without sugars. And no preservative.
Three of them.
One, two, three.
Oh, right.
Maybe it means there's only three of them are natural. The other 15 have been pumped with E-numbers, all the types of shit you can pump in a date.
Gravy.
And this, which is a tiny chocolate bar called ROM, R-O-M. I'm not sure what country it's from. I haven't read the back.
It is Authentico.
Yeah, it is Authentico. That's what it says. Authentico. GB baton filled with cream, 42% of rum. Yeah.
Oh my God,
and it's the daytime and it's a Monday.
Listen, between luxurious and premium, I feel rather plebby in my weird contribution. I had a very, I think that's extraordinary, but I can already tell by what you got that I can imagine the kind of corner shop you had, and it's very different to the Tesco Express that I had around the corner.
Fair enough.
Yeah. where there are no such premium or exclusive. What is a premium and exclusive dates? What were they called? Premium and elegant, exotic.
Decadent, graceful. Sexy dates, erotic dates. No, they're called luxury
erotic
and premium.
I luxury remember erotic dates. I'm lying, I don't. What I love about COVID is now everybody can sort of go, yeah, my dating life is non-existent.
Yeah,
you know,
I used to be like...
and I'm like, yeah, it's really hit mine hard too. I'm such a cranky one. Right, so I thought it was absolutely brilliant because I went through everything in my head. It brought up so many things. We had £1.50,
yes,
which was £1.20 less than I had given myself when I was living in Manchester and unemployed and on the dole, a day to live on.
So £2.70
yeah,
a day.
So,
to live off. Mm-hmm. When was this?
This was after I graduated.
Oh my goodness me, okay.
And I remember, yeah, and it sort of just brought back all that sort of stuff. And it's a very, yeah. So food is a huge, huge topic for me always. And sort of money and food is a really potent one for me at the moment. So you caught me at the right time.
I want all of it.
I went up and down the aisles of this Tesco Express for so long that even though this is a Tesco Express where the addicts run in, fill a ruck, I've seen them countless times, fill their rucksack with instant coffee.
Oh.
And don't run out again. They walk out again and nobody bats an eyelid. I got followed by the security guard because I was picking up things and putting it down frantically because my brain is so dull from COVID, frantically trying to subtract 76 pence from £1.50. And did that mean that I could also... And meanwhile, sort of going, it's not £1.50 you've been given. It's your own £1.50, Siobhan. If you want something else... And I'm like, yeah, but I... And I'm gasping. I could really do with some sparkling water. It's like there's water in the tap. I'm like, but I'm a grown woman. I can have sparkling water if I want. So I'm having a fucking meltdown. So in the end, sort of going, well, I want something sweet and savoury, but I don't like either of these things, but they'll have to do. And I'm like, no, you can, like, trying to get the most out of this 150, like in this weird poverty battle or something, this poverty
it's hard
supermarket sweep.
If it's any consolation, I also and hadn't sort of I just hadn't thought about it much. I thought to force myself, because I've got a borderline supermarket addiction, and it doesn't have to be a proper supermarket, a corner shop would do, but like,
oh, yeah.
I like to go and look at food and buy food every day, and I had to make a choice about whether I had enough money for food or to go to the pub. It was students' days,
yeah.
And a bit afterwards, actually, as well.
Yeah.
There were times where you're like...
Hello, freelancers.
Yeah, and a bit like just taking a long time to learn not to look too far ahead because everything's hopefully going to be all right, you know. But that, like, in the moment, go, oh, can I, can't I? But, yeah, I think it's definitely like... less born out of that and more born out of a nurture thing. My dad is the same about supermarkets, and his mum, who was a little old Austrian sparrow, would go every morning into Farnborough, into supermarkets to look for some bargains.
Yeah.
And so a daily trip to buy one or two things, which is really ironically not the most economical way and certainly not the most COVID safe way to live, it feels like it's in my DNA. What I hadn't predicted today was, just as you said, how dodgy I would look in there, hovering with, so because I knew how spendy I am, because it feels, especially right now, where it feels like going to fucking Thorpe Park poppy day shop, doesn't
absolutely.
It? We're doing so little outside of the home. Ooh, I might make a friend. I took £1.50 in cash as a deal breaker for myself. There was no, I suppose I could have used my phone to tap. Anyway, I didn't. But all the stuff that's around the sort of, you know, under a quid mark is by the cashier.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a queue of people buying things, you know, that they needed, not things like this. No Algerian dates. And I found myself very much sort of loitering near them, waiting for them to get out of the way so I could look at all
I don't know. It seems to me you have got some natural sugars there. You've got alcohol.
unnatural sugars. Yeah. I've probably got a noticeable... emotional shift coming over the course of the podcast, haven't I? You will hear
a
different personality from the beginning to the end of this brief conversation.
I'll have to make sure I know how to work the volume controls on this, because it'll suddenly be like,
oh, good Jesus. Oh dear.
Say scrum diddly umptious. And then you can be in my podcast.
You've shown me yours, so I'll show you mine. It's only fair. So what I got was a zebra Kit Kat.
That's amazing. Oh, will you take me a picture of that?
I have never seen one of these before. And I don't know why, because this is the best thing already in the world. It is zebra, dark and white, which is the only combination of chocolate that I believe in. Forget your milk chocolate. Go home, milk. We don't need you. In fact, the only way you will force me to have milk chocolate is if you tell me that milk chocolate is made out of dark chocolate and white chocolate. It is a perfect combination. And a Kit Kat for 4 o'clock in the day is a lovely thing to have with a cup of tea. So I'm going to be...
Yes.
And it's actually quite nicely packaged, isn't
That's
it?
That's beautiful. It is. It feels like they've taken the inspiration of the zebra and gone, I'm not going to... I think we can be quite on the nose with this. It's.
I love.
Yeah.
Do you think that there are people from like, it's Nestle, Boo Nestle, but do you think that they are, they're not getting much of my money in fairness. Like, but,
no, we know it's less than £1.50.
They're Kit Kat people, like just sort of crouching in the Serengeti. trying to look at animals to get inspiration for the next.
Going, we've done four fingers, we've done two fingers, we've done Chunky. Where do we go next?
Serengeti. Zebra. Yeah. So it's got four fingers, yeah. which is traditional, but why mess yeah. with a classic? That's what I say.
Yeah.
And I want to open it because it's,
yeah.
I think it's going to be quite exciting to look at.
I can't wait to see this, and I'd like it photographed, please, for the listener who's not lucky
Hold on,
enough
let
to
me,
be.
Let me photograph nice before I rip off the
phone to show this.
I mean, I hope we get one or two sponsorship deals out of this.
Really. Yeah. Oh, I've pierced a date.
Uh-oh. I mean, as happens usually with a Kit Kat, usually when I open anything with my vigorous greed, some bit of it has fallen off. But look at the beauty of this.
Oh, she's lovely. She's marbled. It's a marbled Kit Kat. And I'm happy. I thought perhaps they'd go with sharper lines there. And then it would just look... It looks like a human has been involved at somewhere along the line in the making of your Kit Kat. And that brings me joy.
It looks like I'm eating, dear yeah. listener, the bookend. Like, you know, the inside of a book has all the marbling on it.
Yeah. It's lovely. Book. Oh, it's lovely.
And the other thing I bought...
Yeah.
...was noodles.
Yes, masala flavour.
Yeah, Maggie noodles.
I didn't know Maggie did noodles.
No, I only know Maggie from her previous work in pushing chickens into bags for no yes. discernible reason.
Chickens in bags.
And making soggy chicken.
Yeah, but that looks yummy, masala flavour noodles.
Because you need to have, I'm a sweet, but I'm a salty girl.
Uh-huh, yeah, I'm saltier than I am sweet. I probably do need to talk about this date a bit.
Yeah, I can tell you're enjoying it.
I'm not having the best time I've ever had.
Did the stick add to the enjoyment?
The stick actually was one of the best thing. Piercing through the leathery hide with the stick. There's something in it there. It's a stone. It's a date stone, but it looks like an animal's shit.
Yeah.
It looks like a fossil. It looks like what's it called when a caterpillar's halfway to becoming a pupae chrysalid.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, I don't want to see it. Put that away and focus just on the edible bit, and still, like...
It looks dry.
You have to get through this leathery, baggy, weird... It could be a finger. Like, it feels like what it would probably feel like to eat a finger that somebody's coated in honey.
No.
Of someone with a really wrinkly hand, Siobhan.
No, I don't think you should be eating... Is that what ladyfingers are?
No, that's okra, isn't it?
No, ladyfingers, the biscuits.
Oh, yes.
The tiramisu.
Your friend and mine, Deborah Francis White, likes one of those. Not a euphemism.
Well... Well, she is a lady. She's one of the ladiest ladies I know.
She's one of the ladiest ladies I know. Yeah.
I've never eaten okra.
Haven't you?
No. I'm a bit white when it comes to my okra investigations.
Right.
I just, because somebody once just said to me, they're lovely. It's slimy, but it's lovely. And I went,
Yeah.
Blocked out everything else and just heard the word slime. And slime isn't a huge thing I want with my food.
No.
There are other things that I want.
They are a, they're one of the only things, there used to be lots apparently in the hemisphere we live in anyway, in terms of like stuff that grew naturally and was foraged that had this effect. And they're probably the only plant left that does this, that is widely eaten, where it does genuinely inside have, when it hits your mouth, has a mucal quality. But I like it. But I think they're really nice, like fried as part of some like beautifully spiced Indian cooking, effectively.
Yeah. No.
Tell me before I tuck into my rom
and you get too drunk
and lose the power to listen. I want to know everything. I want to know about feelings around eating and money, because I think if you've at some point not had enough, if you've not been able to afford to eat what you want, like it has a resounding impact on you. I think our generation feel like, I have grandparents who, or had grandparents who were fucking like so different to our parents in terms of how they viewed food waste because of the wars.
Yeah.
And then I've got parents who have had to be trained to even recycle.
Yeah.
To even care less. Whereas their parents, when we'd stay in a grandparents' house where they were on holiday to sort of house sit, and before we'd even got in the car to leave, my nana would have been in the bin taking out tins that still had two beans in, or, you know, like using milk that definitely smelt a bit. You know, nothing ever got thrown away. So too far that way. And then, but they managed to have a generation of kids that were too, like, generation plastic, screw your recycling. And then you've
open the window and throw out the rubbish. My parents would do that. I'd be like, what are you doing?
Oh, it's like that episode of Mad Men where they have a picnic. And then they just get up and walk off with and leave everything there. And it's like, nothing's ever mentioned about it, but you watch it as a modern viewer and go, but it's sort of what everyone was doing.
Totally. Totally, without a shadow of a doubt. I remember my mother, who was a chain smoker, driving, smoking one cigarette, putting it out, opening a packet of cigarettes, and without even thinking, opening and putting the plastic and it waving out that way. And I remember being young enough for the feeling of shame to be relatively new, but old enough to sort of know that this was shameful. She was not my parents. I imagine like your parents. Like I remember giving out to my dad years ago, sort of when he was giving out to me for putting this stuff in the wrong recycling or whatever, because other people's bins scare me. Dishwashers scare me, and other people's bins scare me, because you need a PhD in fucking bins. You're like, does this go here? I don't know where things go. I'm just gonna shit on top of the table and go home. All right, it'll be easier than if I tried to put this tea bag somewhere.
They'd have learned to do it like plugs. Just have one or two types. Come on, don't make it purple there. Three roads down, they're green and brown.
Yeah, you're right. And this plastic goes in this one. Oh, but it's only plastic with a small P. And you're like, what does that mean? I don't understand. But anyway, I remember roaring at me about putting something anyway, like he needed an excuse. And I was like, shut up, you. I remember being incredibly small and like them fly tipping. Fly tipping a fucking fridge in the crossroads in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that area didn't have any refuse collection. And in fairness to him, like, I mean, I'm painting them in a very bad light, but he sort of said, do you know, it was different then. We didn't know. And I'm like, but where did you think it was going to end up? And he went, we didn't think about that. And I sort of found myself going, every time I have the argument with myself about the recycling, I'm like, I don't know where this goes. I don't know where this goes. And I can't blame my dad for sort of going, well, sometimes I put a fridge out and it goes away. And we never talk about the fridge. And I'm going, well, what am I doing? What am I? I'm not really doing anything better than that by just putting the fridge in a nice bag and putting it on the curbside when I meant to. I still don't know where it ends up.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true. We don't know where it ends up. I live in Southeast London, and it's one of the things I love about it. But that you can, you not a fridge, but like,
or you can put something out and it'll be picked up.
Terrible vase, a knackered old anything you want rid of. If it's completely broken, the done thing is not to do that, or to put a big sign on it saying "broken, but I believe fixable." It will still be gone within an hour.
Yeah,
presumably. Not just, I don't know, like I don't feel that bad about that. Someone who wants it's got it.
I've
got two nice cups. I've got like some cool glasses with like blue checks on. I've got an original, probably not, Prince, like Monet. Diana and Charles mug. Yay!
An original Monet that I just picked up. I mean, just needed a bit of touching up, but it was fine.
It needed re-signing. It just needed re-signing by me, but it was fine. Yeah. Oh, comical. But yes, sorry, I digress. Yeah. I think ever having not having enough money to eat what you want can sort of, if that happens to you even once, it never leaves you. Mm-hmm. I suppose with this, my experience of that has been minimal. And so, but I would say I do regularly go, oh my God, I'm so lucky. I can afford to have whatever I want now. It's up to me what I have.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's sort of, there's a couple of things. Like I really found it interesting what you said, just to sort of go back a little bit of what you were saying about your grandparents versus your parents and their attitude towards food. What I noticed particularly about my parents' generation, who, I mean, like Mam, they're both dead now, but like Mam, if she was alive, would have been in her 80s, you know, so probably other people's grandparents sort of age, because I'm only 21. And that generation, my dad included, who was younger, but I suppose their prime would have been like the 60s and 70s, especially the 70s, I think. And they had an attitude towards food that was so damaging. And I think it was that entire generation, because they were the generation of the grapefruit diet.
Oh,
They were the generation of skinny automatically equals good. So I remember my grandparents, my grandmother grabbing my cheeks and being delighted, hugging my lovely arms and, you know, fine big girl.
Yeah.
And my mother, who was another fine big girl, not feeling the same way about it. And that was no lack of love. That was a societal thing. That was what society had told her and my dad. I know my dad, in retrospect, I can look back on things and I go, he was obsessed with food. The pair of them had an unnatural, but especially my dad had a very unnatural relationship with food, I think, because of what he was told. Also, like Ireland, I suppose, you know, my mother was a fantastic cook. You know, like growing up in the 80s, we had curries and, you know, this bag ball, please, that was so passe. We were trying out all these curries and all these really so-called exotic foods for Ireland in the 80s during a recession. She knew her stuff.
And, amazing.
And also we grew everything. We lived in the countryside. It was all that sort of very... Everybody had their garden, and Dad was, both of them were fantastic gardeners. So, but I remember we had a glut of spinach, and they ate spinach morning, noon, and night to lose weight. The pair of them to lose weight for some, I don't know, for the summer or whatever it was, both as to use up all the spinach that they were growing, also to lose weight. And I must have been very small when that happened. I have a vague recollection of it. But long as I
have any childhood memory of parents doing that, though, is just... They'll have had no idea, but as you say, it's so damaging that, like,
Well, I mean, it was grand for me. They were forcing food down my neck, but for themselves is what I mean. Like, for themselves. Yeah. And as long as I lived, my mother could never look at spinach again. And like, you go, well, she ruined a lovely food for herself. Like, I feel sorry for that generation. And now, as a result, I have my own shit going on with food that has its own separate influences. And of course, my parents have a bit of influences with that. There's a huge thing with my family. We don't say I love you. We cook food. I think that's very, very, very common. But I remember once telling my mother, we'd discovered she'd brought home peanut butter. And we were like, oh my gosh, this is lovely. We had peanut butter for lunch in our sandwiches every single solitary day for the entirety of our school careers. And not the entirety, like everything about it was so, like, the intention was good. Like, it was freshly baked bread. It was
amazing,
beautiful soda bread. But it was so fresh; it was still warm when it went into.
Oh,
wow! Not wow. So you're opening a lunchbox where hot fucking bread has gone into with peanut butter.
Okay.
No child should open a lunchbox and take the condensation off the lid of it and try and scoop up the porridge congealed mess that your sandwiches has disintegrated into. And it wasn't fucking, like, beautiful sourdough she was making. She was making soda bread, which is basically hardened porridge.
Yeah.
I used to go to our neighbor's house, and I was eventually sent home because I was asking for too many slices of white bread and red jam, please. Could I have white bread and red jam? White bread and red jam was all I wanted. Because we were getting what now is the sort of incredibly bespoke, yummy mummy sort of experience, you know, the homemade jam and the freshly baked bread every day, you know. Food is a huge thing. It's a brilliant, brilliant topic to have a podcast on because...
Well, I think it's... I don't know anybody with a completely simple relationship with it. And I think specifically, you know, there's a lot of noise in the world about food. No one goes, most people are happy to go, I love food. But I think eating is different. It's a very different thing. And it's a different thing to go, no, I love eating and I do it for a lot more than fuel. And I have love and I have hate and I have shame and I have things I've resolved and I have work to do. And I think that's almost everyone. And I think to come back to that parents and that generation thing, I think it was a hard, not that, you know, this diet industry's bullshit, you know, it's not new, and there've been versions since time immemorial, don't know the word, for a long time, for centuries, there've been ways of fucking with how you eat that are not great. They're not natural, not orderly, whatever. Not going to make people happy.
No.
Or not sustainable or whatever. But there was, with the kind of post-World War II... sort of came waves and waves of people realizing there's some serious money to be made out of faddy bullshit. And I mean, ironically, to anyone who is, I mean, and it's just never stopped. And now it's sometimes government endorsed, you know, and it's like, oh God, it's boggling. And it is worth saying those poor, especially women, but anyone who were coming into their prime in those decades where suddenly everybody was doing all that stuff. Oh, God.
Yeah. And like, neither my mother or father would have recognized that within themselves. And this is also with hindsight, and I don't know if I'm correct, but it's something that I would notice in things that they'd say, that it would be such a connection. They wouldn't want... Because, of course, for me, as a fat woman, there is that connection with food, because one equals the other. So my enjoyment has to be, I have to bash through the wall of fat girl eating if I want to enjoy my zebra Kit Kat. Do you know, like, each time?
Yeah.
And then you have a hole. like every other home, who, you know, which, you know, they remember once you said that you liked a yogurt. So when you come home from that awful London to your rightful place in Cork, they'll fill the fridge with that yogurt. And then they'll despair because I've eaten the yogurt, but also the yogurt needs to be eaten. And, you know, like there's this.
Yeah.
It's you know, what you're talking about is just the sort of almost the aesthetic, the sensorial experience of eating. And it's so rare to get that in a neutral state, really, is it? Like, yeah. I still think, because food is about control and not even about the control of your own body or whatever, it's about your own independence. When, yeah. Before I moved out of home, I used to dream of going up and down supermarket aisles and choosing my own food to put into the trolley. It was that type of autonomy. And even to this day, even though that, you know, I'm very classy now, and even though I don't eat okra, I can eat loads of different things. The height of feeling like a grown-up to me is still ordering, something about ordering specifically pizza for takeaway. Really? Specifically pizza takeaway to my flat.
Yeah.
And it's, that, you feels know, that's like the epitome. The films.
Right, of course.
It's all the films, isn't it? It's all the films that turn, they're like, oh, I couldn't, will we just order in tonight? Will we? And I'm like, yeah, pizza. You know, you're carrying a whole lifetime full of suggestive imagery in that one action, you know? It isn't as if that you're rushing down to, I don't know, the Rubber Duck or whatever the fancy places are called and asking for it.
We've all been to the Rubber Duck. I think I've been thinking a lot about that recently, you know, the fact that I think as my, I have a 5-year-old who's, you know, got an increasingly present personality. But I am, he's had that. Yeah, he's kind of, pretty moody from the off. But it is that, it's a funny old age 5, because you're finding your, exactly that. It's so obvious, this desire for agency, which I don't think goes away. And actually, it's pretty mental how long we take to give kids agency over what they eat. Because if you're going to extol the virtues of eating intuitively, which to me is happiness, it's a long old journey and it's a work in progress, but actually it's a relinquishing, well, it's a complete control that comes hand in hand with a complete relinquishing of control and a kind of an absence of caring all the time, a taking away of emotional investment, and not to have to have an internal conversation or feel feelings every time I'm going to eat something high in energy. Do you know what I mean? And that's taken absolutely fucking years of therapy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and just getting older. To go through that process and get to the point where you've learned that there is this way to be happy, not all the time, and it doesn't equal happy with your appearance, I have learned. I thought when I sorted my eating, I would be like, and now I will be happy to look at myself. But to get happy with eating is just sort of a letting go of those things and like a freedom. And it's so freeing. And it is a bit bonkers how long we take to give kids as a society, in Western society, to have even the veneer of that agency.
Yeah.
Because the result is kids who, when they are finally old enough to walk to school and back by themselves, are going to go and get the stuff they've not felt like they've been allowed. Yeah. Because essentially it's the same psychology as when you're on a restrictive diet. It's not sustainable. You are going to break. And when you break, you're very likely to binge.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So the other day we went to get takeaway coffees and I was like, do you know what, like for this afternoon, do you want to, I'm going to get something for Steffi. Let's get, we can all choose a cakey thing each. And he was like, I'd like an egg sandwich, please. And I was like, okay, cool. Like that. And he was like, I don't want anything too sugary because I had this after pudding at lunch. And I was like, okay, like that. Got home, he ate his egg sandwich. And then was like, can I have half of yours? And managed to go and get half of Steph's. So he's... Yeah, he played us. He played us hard. Yeah.
That's how it's done. Respect. Respect.
Respect. Respect.
Yeah, man. My brother, you know, I'll never forget the day he came home when he finally was being taught fractions in school. And he came back and he went, Mom! Apparently there isn't a bigger half! I told him every time my parents were like, go on, share that with your brother. I'm like, well, I'm taking the bigger half. And he'd be like, well, that is maths.
I love it. Have you, as an actor, ever had to do any interesting or memorable eating as part of your work?
Have you ever had to
eat in a play or anything?
I did a play called Midden, where the main act, the main climax of the play is set around Sunday dinner. And I, my character made the entire dinner in the time. So we had it was an Easter dinner. So we had a roast leg of lamb that would have been par roasted and then finished off on stage.
Wow.
Yeah, we had, I would peel the carrots, chop the carrots, peel the spuds, you know, put boiling water into them. Like, it was, in a way, deeply theatrical, in another way, not at all. But
God.
And then we'd sit down and during tech, of course, the leg of lamb got to be roasted really, like cooked properly because tech took long. And it was the longest tech that ever happened because we were, shit, somebody has to say something. I don't know, is it my line?
Yeah.
Who cares?
We
were all in digs in Oldham and like sort of, you know, this was the best meat. This is the first bit of meat we had on our fucking regional theatre salaries. Like, going, oh, Ma, tell me about that event. Oh, it's so good, isn't it? Really good.
Get in.
And then for the run. And then for the run, like, you know, trying to pretend to be eating soft boiled carrots when they were hard and like it's impossible to cut a carrot.
Yeah.
They were flying all over the place. And of course, the highlight of this, that they, you know, there would be a toast made and I had to open the Asti Spumanti. And it was in the early days of non-alcoholic theatrical champagne. God knows where they'd gotten it, but it was encrusted with sugar.
God.
So it was impossible to open. And God bless Oldham, the Oldham Coliseum. So I was like, and I went, and eventually one of the other actresses went, because it was an all-female play, went, oh, let me have a go there. I can't remember, Aileen, I think was my character's name. She went, couldn't do it. So it went around the whole table. at this point, we're openly corpsing at each other. You know, we've added we've added a good 7 minutes onto the play anyway. Then out in the dark, we hear, "Oh, for God's sake, give it to me." And we looked over and this fella came down the aisle. Big sort of, everybody came around with clothes going down,
oh,
you know.
But a God.
Bit like, you know, a bit, but what was wonderful, a bit like, you know, don't send women in to do a bloke's kind of thing. He couldn't do it either. He
yes!
couldn't do it either.
Oh, so, thank God. I was going to say, I hope you told this story as an I'm a feminist, but
no,
on the guilty feminist.
No, he
but because
do it
no,
either.
Actually, he couldn't do it either. No one can beat the sugar encrusted
so no one had champagne. And that's what feminism is. Nobody gets to have champagne.
Oh, amazing. I love it.
There was one scene in The Fall that we were eating Chinese takeaway, and it was very early in the morning, and the Chinese takeaway, we had to spit it out after each take. I did not. It wasn't my highest.
I love Chinese takeaway the morning after. I'm going to try my rum bar, by the way.
Oh, yes, go on.
Oh my God. Just immediately on opening it, there is a really strong smell of rum. I have to collect my kid from an educational setting after this. I'm going to smell, aren't I, of booze. It's already a bit smashed. Okay, like I'll be in a minute. Okay, it tastes quite Christmassy, actually.
Oh!
There's like, there's some sort of cloves and cinnamon behaviour in this.
What's in the middle of it?
I think it's like a caramelly.
Nope.
No, I am.
It's a bit too much like okra.
Do you know what? This is horrid. My £1.50 has, I've done terribly.
Oh.
I wish I'd had a zebra Kit Kat. The chocolate around the outside is just shit chocolate. Like it tastes of sort of Holland. You know, in hot countries, the chocolate's shit because you can't have much cocoa butter in it because it would melt in the shops. So it tastes of sort of shit holiday chocolate. And the inside tastes, I suppose, like one of the sort of dusty old out of date liqueur chocolate that the grandparent you're meeting in their nursing home who doesn't know who you are anymore.
Oh God.
Has passed you. It's that sad.
That is a sad culinary experience.
It's a sad, sad story. Yeah. Yeah, I'm out, I think, there.
Yeah.
But I've tried it and that was I'm a big brave girl.
But, yeah, and oh God, that's sad.
I reckon even where I live, if I pop these out on the pavement, they wouldn't go anywhere.
They'd get thrown back into you.
And yeah.
What the?
No.
Yum in my tum.
My dad was a customs officer, customs and excise. So he worked the docks on the port of Cork. And when I was very small, he sometimes would have to work on the weekend. So we'd drive into Cork City, and this was the 80s. So the ships would have come in from the USSR.
Wow.
And they would, so he'd be hopping on the ships in his full regalia, checking the stock, you know. And the Port of Cork, historically, is a very busy port, like ports are, but less so recently. And he would go on, and I'd be like, would you like to come on? And I'd be like, yeah, okay. When I look back, he used to, you know, I'd be small enough that he'd have to sort of pick me up and pass me on to a sailor who would sort of lift me under my arms and put me back down on the thing. And I remember it all as being some of the most, even at the time going, that was so lovely. These men who would have been on boats for such a long period of time. They would have been on for a very, they would have been doing several stuff. They're not getting off, like, they're not singing Jack Brel songs in the port of Amsterdam. Like, they're staying on and they're going to the, and they're, you know, it's not great living, frankly, and they're not being paid a lot. And I remember being like, I'd be passed around by,
just to have the, for the human, and for the sheer human joy of cuddling
a little girl. And I remember captains, and they would just fall at me. Of course, when do they think about their little girls at home, no doubt, or whatever, you know, and just any, not even if you like, just a lovely, because I would have been naturally only lovely. But I remember I'd be coming out and I'd have bits of chocolate. They'd be giving me chocolate. And I remember being so excited because anytime you're like, yes, I don't care what it is. And each time going, oh God. I think there's sand in it. You know, it'd be that grainy. So I really know the taste of Soviet chocolate, you know? And like dad was a bit like myself, we're dreadful kleptos. So if he saw something lying, he'd say, should we be off? So we'd have like little badges or flag, like little pins and everything, you know? But I'll never forget the taste of that chocolate. And I mean, I presume it was, like, when I look back on things that we had in photographs and stuff, like, I'm like, that's Soviet flags or whatever, but it could have been forever, but it had that very much, that very specific taste of, well, let's say not Cadbury's.
It wasn't
Cadbury's, but it was grainy, but it would be given like in a crumpled piece of this weird tissue paper to this little girl on a boat. And I always really loved that. But like, of course.
What an amazing story.
But it's nice, isn't it? Because of course, in this day and age, and for all the right reasons, you'd be like, what? You shouldn't have been. They were passing you. And you're like, no, I remember it as a really nice thing.
Totally.
I remember it as a really nice thing. And,
nothing scary about it. Just lovely.
Really lovely. And I think there's something nice about, here's something nice. I must do something nice. Have some chocolate.
Oh, some grim, grainy chocolate.
But sure, it's all they had.
Totally.
Especially after dad had like wiped them out or whatever was, what else was going on there. A couple of nuclear warheads, etc.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's ticking.
But I've taken it just in case.
And a chair.
He'd have loved the streets of Catford.
He would have. He would have. Yeah. Should I throw in everything? I found these dates on the ground.
You've given me two memories. Both quite inappropriate. One with my Austrian, I don't know why your story sparked. I do one of them. One was I went on a school trip that involved going to Turkey when I was in my teens, and I'd never tried Turkish delight before. And I remember being queuing along the seafront to buy freshly made Turkish delight in Turkey and being thrilled. It's probably about 12 or 13. I had already had a series of waitressing jobs in pubs, and I'd saved up for this holiday.
Wow.
The school trip, posh school trip, like expensive school trip. I think it was about £500.
Ooh.
And my parents had gone, you save up this much and we'd give this much and this much. And it had been one of those, and it was amazing. But I remember queuing up. I remember feeling like watching the sunset.
So you were, I'm going to buy my Turkish.
Yeah,
with my
it was
money.
Really empowered and like really like, and the smells and everything. And then tasting it and being like, nah, not for me. Has like it's. I'm sure it was objectively beautiful. It was like rose water in it or something, and you know, dusty coating. But remember, like it's too that is too sweet, and having to be like, oh, thank you very much. Am I disgusting? Disgusting food.
Even the thought of it, you're having a slug of water to get rid of the echo taste.
And the other one, and I don't know. This is the one that's more tenuous as to why it sparked it as a memory. But I remember being out with my Austrian nana actually, and being tiny and being farting about playing somewhere and her beckoning me back by shaking a bag of penny sweets. Like a dog. Like a dog with a treat.
Oh, that's and how I learned to walk.
Yeah.
That's it. So there was a, apparently in family folklore,
it's already so funny. Yeah. Oh, that's how I learned to walk.
That's how I learned to walk. I never learned to crawl.
Mm-hmm. Bum shuffler.
No, I rolled.
Rolled?
Which I now realise.
I snorted.
I mean, all babies are chubby, aren't they? Well, please God, all babies, if things are going well, babies are chubby.
Fat privilege as a baby, absolutely. Yes, please.
So I used to sort of, remember in set 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like I'd sort of like, in a, whatever they're called, I'd bounce from thing to thing and sort of get to eventually where I was going. I'd roll to the leg, and like I'm stopping, so I'll keep going that way. Like a really early Japanese robot, just sort of, or those robot hoovers, that is, you know, sort of a prototype robot hoover.
Yeah.
And my granny, anyway, Grandma Coulet was getting a little bit sick and tired. I was the last of my generation of cousins to be walking, of my age group, of that strata. Mm-hmm. She was like, what? So apparently she got up and got out a bar of dairy milk and waved. Oh my God.
Ding! She's up.
And she never rolled again. Yeah, apparently that's where I learned to walk in Grandma's house.
I love
it. Because she decided enough was enough.
Enough
the
is
child
enough.
Needs to stop rolling. And funnily enough, in
the carrots we've been dangling are too carroty.
Too carroty.
And we need to get some dairy milk
get
carrots.
Get some dairy milk. Get a dairy milk. Yeah. Oh, there's so many lovely memories with food. Like talking to dairy milk.
Yeah.
I didn't realise I was planning on speaking all these things about like psychological connections and being fat and psychology, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, there's a really, have you ever? So again, in the pubs in the 80s, the dairy milk you'd get in pubs is really thin. It's not a block at all. It'd be like a kid's one. It's
Oh, yes. Like, did they have like safari animals on them, ironically?
Oh,
did
yeah.
they have like, we'd have the equivalent here, and it was like very, very thin with
embossed animals on it and stuff.
Yeah, embossed animals on it and a raised
that's
edge
a
like a
one.
Pelmet. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's not Cadbury's.
So
I think that was
thin...
called an animal bar. So
it was called an animal bar.
No, this
yeah,
was
no,
thin,
thin,
and it was like a ruler, shaped like a ruler almost.
Great.
That sort of
okay.
size. But it'd be perfect for when your ma and dad would go to the pub, they'd buy you that. But my special treat was that I could use the chocolate to scoop the white top of the Guinness off. Like
Whoa.
A spoon.
That could work. Yes. That's nice.
Yes.
Oh,
sir.
What a lovely memory.
Yes.
Oh.
Sir. Yes, sir.
And I can really imagine.
And that was
working.
My treat. That was dad. Like, you know, have a go of that. And you're like, oh, and you'd be like, and he had such a sweet tooth himself, he'd be trying and say, it's lovely. He then also got diabetes, but you know, life is long.
Life is long. Oh, how delicious.
Yeah, really delicious.
God, what a great idea. I really give that a whirl.
I really
do. You know, it's my favourite bit of a pint of Guinness is the creamy top. I'm not that fussed about the rest, unless it's got something sickly in it, like Tia Maria or something.
Yeah.
Like some, or something added
Blackcurrant.
To like... Yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
Mm. A cloud full of magic drops a rainfall of devastating shyness across the whole of the world. No one can even stand to look at anyone else, let alone talk to them. And just as we're allowed to meet up a bit again, this is a disaster. The world starts grinding to a terrifying and terrified halt, but the cloud has agreed to put things back to normal, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, Siobhan, read out loud, which is awful, seeing as you've just been doing lots of voiceover work anyway. You have to read out loud the whole of the book, Me, Elton John, by Elton John, reading it all really nicely and properly, correcting any mistakes, audiobook style, whilst gliding around a frozen Russian lake. It's Fortean. With your feet balancing on the backs of two giant but tempestuous swans. It sounds impossible, but you do it! You're a hero. Your reward is a place in the whole universe's hearts as the woman who saved us all from the shyness plague. But your reward in the moment is the feast of your dreams. Now, bearing in mind, this is the opposite of a last meal, because you are the happiest it's possible to be. You're high as a blooming kite because you've just basically become the whole world's hero. You're like, you've godlike status. You couldn't be giddier. But because of the old swan gliding, you're starving. So you're the happiest and hungriest it's possible to be. The feast of your dreams can be utterly fantastical. I don't give a shit about any consequences, ethics, health, and fuck all of that. Just if nothing mattered, and if anything was possible, what would you eat? What would you drink? And if there's a who, with, and where, you can have a who, with, and where.
Oh, really? Oh, my. Oh, well done, me.
And well done, you.
I have no sense of balance. I mean, that swan shit would have been really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say I'm starving as well.
Yeah.
So I'm on top of the world, and the world adores me.
And, yes.
And I am thinking, oh, I'm a bit hungry now. What would I like to eat? Oh, says the world, you can eat whatever you want. I think, and I know that you said not the last meal, but I think for the same reasons, being delighted and having your last meal, there's a slight overlap. And the reason I'll pick these things is because it will bring me great joy on what is already a joyful day.
Yes.
So it's simple food. But there's something about having fried mackerel.
Ooh,
fried fresh amazing. Mackerel, lightly dusted in flour, like really fresh mackerel. Brown bread, soda bread with Bandon Co-op butter.
Amazing.
I have thought about this.
I love this.
But
is it quite salty, the butter?
Yes, it is.
Mm.
Yes, sir. So it's really salty, but it's very creamy, and it's not spreadable, because that's a lie, but it doesn't get as rock hard for some reason, even though it is pure butter. Soda bread, but not that it's hot and it'll dissolve into porridge, but like just nice solid soda bread. And I'm ashamed to say it would have to be a, because 1 in 10 cups of tea, if you're lucky, you get the right level of the milk and the darkness of the tea, and then for it to be all at the right temperature and for it not to go cold. Because I mean, maybe some people who love me, this would make it more of a triumphant meal rather than a death meal, a death row meal. And some humans who were really thankful to me could breathe on it to keep it warm.
Very nice.
So that so the meal could take as long as I wanted, because the cup of tea wouldn't get cold.
Yeah, because understand.
There'd be like loads of people willing to breathe on the tea.
Human breathe. Yeah, yeah.
Or lovely. Maybe like put it under the, keep it warm, or I don't know how they keep it warm.
Just under their wing.
Under their wing.
They could sit on it like a penguin would its baby.
That's right. Or they could, you know, the swan is probably shattered at this point. Yeah. So scoop out the swan, put it in there. I mean, if only we had other ways of keeping things warm, but we won't.
We won't. Not in this fantasy.
I don't see that.
It's got to be a living beast that keeps the tea warm, and I love that element of this fantasy more than any other.
And it would have to be.
And I loved all the rest already.
White pepper,
right?
Which I think is a superior pepper.
Okay.
And then some, you know, sea salt.
Oh my god. Fucking delicious.
Crispy
that
skin.
Delicious.
It really is. It's very simple, but it's really, really delicious. Really delicious.
It sounds amazing. It sounds like it tastes of comfort and home, but somehow maybe the summer and the sea.
Yes, that's right. It's the outside in for some reason.
It's the outside in. Mm. Yes. How beautifully put.
It's nice.
Oh,
it's nice.
Lush.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing my silly podcast.
I love your silly podcast, and I was very thrilled to be asked to come on.
Delicious.
Oh, what a lovely episode. I loved having that conversation, and I loved listening back to it too. I mean, if for any reason you're not already following Siobhan on Twitter and Instagram, get on with it. It's at C-I-O-B-H-N-I on both those things. Or, of course, there's a link in the podcast notes, including links, as ever, to everything of interest that we mentioned. I get my fruit and veg from Oddbox. I'm not being sponsored by them. I just love them. And they do wonky stuff that supermarkets have rejected, often just for being too big. At the moment, it's mainly because stuff's surplus, because restaurants are closed. So there's some really snazzy stuff in it. Anyway, I think they're amazing and doing so many good things for the old planet. They're only for in and around London at the moment. Anyway, if you're interested, you can get a tenner off your first box using a link that's in the podcast notes, or I've also put it in the bio of the podcast Twitter, which you please may you follow at The Hoovering Pod. Also, why don't you follow us on Instagram at The Hoovering Pod? Feel free to support the podcast with lovely reviews. 5 stars are the best. Recommendations to human faces. Outside still, please, if you're in the UK, and on the social medias, tweeting nice things and stuff. It's lovely of you when you do that. Or you can support the podcast with actual cash money, either on Acast Supporter or on Patreon. Again, links in the podcast notes. Follow me if you like, at Jessica Foster Q. And if you want to send me anything longer than a tweet, like email me, you can do that through my website, jessicafosterq.com, where my last-ditch attempt at rescheduled tour dates are also finally listed. So if there's any that have got tickets there anywhere near where you live, crack on, please, and snap them up. We're going to have one last summer hurrah for my show, Hench, before I move on to working up my new one. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham, and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.